And as you're ready, settle in. It's helpful to look around your space, notice where you are, notice who might be here with you. You can do that. Taking time to orient and to settle in. Find a posture that feels welcoming, that feels comfortable for you. And take a moment in that posture to notice the support beneath your body, a cushion or chair or bed or mat, whatever it is. And notice the weight of your body present in this moment. It can be helpful to take two or three slower, more intentional breaths. Breathing in, feeling the nourishment of air, exhaling, releasing, letting go of any excess tension. Anything extra it took to get here tonight? And allowing, inviting the next in-breath. And then on the next out-breath, staying in contact with the felt sense of the breath. Your lungs, your nose, your throat, your body. And relaxing into the little natural pause at the end of the out-breath. And then allowing breathing to be normal, natural. And choosing whatever anchor of attention, object of attention, feels right for this mind, this heart, this body tonight. And continue. Tuning in, attuning to the soothing quality of breathing in and out, or the broader field of sensations of aliveness in the body. Or open up to sound. Your simple presence, open awareness. Grounding in this moment. Inviting, welcoming, whatever arises. Allowing it to flow, to move. And eventually fade or shift. Settling in. If you find the mind distracted, see how graciously you can greet the arising of awareness of that. Practicing a non-contention with what is, just aware. And then returning to this moment. This breath. And in the last few moments of this meditation, the invitation is to tune in to your heart or wherever the emotional center of your being, your body is. And gazing back upon this time in meditation, including everything that arose with as much of an attitude of friendliness, goodwill, kindness as possible. Really intentionally appreciating, savoring the good moments. And holding anything else with a sense of loving interest or loving patience. And from that place, radiating good wishes, kindness, compassion outwards towards your companions here tonight, in person or virtually, and towards yourself. And allowing those good wishes to flow farther if they want to. Moving outwards like clouds on the wind or light from a star. Wishing that all beings may be free from harm and causing harm. May all beings be safe, peaceful, and free. Just appreciating how long that bell goes. Just keeps going. May our practice reverberate outward in the same way. So, since this is a bit of a series, these three nights, I'm going to do a brief recap of last week, just to really touch on it for those who weren't here. So, the overall topic is the roots of well-being, Or whether known in Pali as the Kusala Mula, the wholesome or skillful roots of experience. And those are non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion. And as I spoke about last week, early Buddhism, the Buddha defined a lot of things through negation, what they're not, which sounds a little bit clunky maybe in contemporary English. And it has power because being not something doesn't define its opposite as one thing. It leaves this whole range of possibilities. So in early Buddhism, greed, hatred, and delusion are the roots of suffering. Hence, non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion are the roots of skillfulness, goodness, awakening. And just as greed, hatred, and delusion are often considered to motivate our actions, even our thinking, to distort it, to filter it, so too these beautiful qualities that arise in their absence can motivate thought, even life force, action, speech. And they're roots of well-being because not only are the qualities of non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion helpful in of themselves, if you have a moment of not hating, it feels better generally than a moment of hating or hostility. They also are supporting conditions, foundations for other good qualities, for other beautiful things to arise in the psyche, in relationships, and in life. They're supportive conditions for each other as well. If I'm not wanting something really badly, if I don't get it, I'm much less likely to be hostile about it, for example. The complete absence of greed, hatred, and delusion is actually synonymous with full awakening. If you can imagine a heart, a mind completely free of these forces, what's left? Equanimity, joy, peace, kindness, metta, all kinds of beautiful things, wisdom. So that is one definition the Buddha taught of complete awakening. And meanwhile, the rest of us can learn a lot from just little glimpses, little moments of absence of the subtler forms or the bigger, more awful forms of greed, hatred, or ignorance, delusion. So tonight, the focus is on non-hatred. And as I was talking about with this sort of language of negation, language of not, many experiences can arise that fit with non-hatred. And I'm going to offer a bit of a word cloud of some. So if you like, you can just sit and feel into these words in your body and your heart as I read them or speak them. Have your eyes closed or open, it's up to you. The idea is to have a more embodied response to how they feel in you. So, mindful awareness is the first word. You should see some of these are phrases. Open interest. Loving curiosity. Appreciation. Respect. Compassion. Allowing. Acceptance. Letting be. Welcoming. Lack of a need to control. Care. Empathetic joy. Gratitude. Generosity. Non-entanglement. Equanimity. Freedom. Peace. Friendliness. Loving kindness or metta. So that's the word cloud. And those last three, peace or being peaceable, friendliness, and loving kindness or metta are the ones that the Buddha most often associates with non-hatred in the ancient teachings. These others come up, but those are used so often that some of those words, love especially, or kindness, are often used synonymously in the Pali with the word for non-hatred. It's very common. So I'll talk about those and then I'll offer some prompts for optional small group discussion. So whether you're online or you're here, if you don't want to participate, you just let me know and you can sit and meditate while other people chat. It's totally up to you. So these first two, being peaceable and friendliness, I'm going to talk a little bit about together tonight because they don't have to coexist, but they often can coexist. And I'm going to talk about the first one I'm going to talk about them with a story. Some of you may have heard this story before. It is a written account by a man named Terry Dobson, who was the first American Aikido master. He was actually one of the first two non-Japanese people to ever be trained in the art of Aikido many years ago in Japan, and took it quite seriously, lived with the sensei for years up until he got married. And he describes one of those times where he was in training. He'd already been in training for quite a while. He was in Japan and he was riding the train home, I guess, from the city. And the train is clack, clack, clacking its way through the countryside. And, it's fairly full. And at a certain stop, a really big man gets on the train and he's drunk and he's loud and he's mean and he's aggressive. And he starts kind of yelling at and intimidating people, tries to kick an old lady as she's going away and like scares a woman and her baby, and they kind of scuttle off to the other side of the car. And Terry's standing there, grabbing onto one of the poles, watching this. And he had been instructed by his sensei that Aikido is the art of peace, and he's not to use his skill in any kind of aggressive way. But there was this part of him, he said, he was young at the time, and he was like, he was looking for a good reason to fight, to use his martial arts. And this just seemed like the perfect chance. This guy was just out of control, big, mean, scaring the heck out of everybody. And so he does some sort of nonverbal things to draw the man's attention to him and away from the elders and women that he was intimidating. Kind of like purses his lips and blows him a kiss and just really ticks him off. And so the drunk roars at him and starts to come at him. And just a few minutes before they engage, there's this ear-splittingly loud, very friendly, "Hi, how are you?" aimed at the drunk. And Terry and the big guy just both whirl around and they both fixate on this little tiny ancient Japanese man sitting near where the drunk was standing. And his eyes are twinkling and he's just beaming with delight at this man. It's like, "How are you?" He's like, "None of your business." Or, "What you been drinking?" And there's just something about the way this little old man engaged this very angry drunk guy that broke the spell. He said, whatever he said, I actually don't remember what it was. And then it was sake. And then the old man, "Oh, I love sake." And he just starts talking about drinking sake with his wife in the backyard and just engaging this drunk. And the next thing you know, they're sitting side by side having a conversation. And he engages him and he goes, "I bet you have a nice wife too, and you like drinking sake." And the drunk just starts bawling. He's like, "No, my wife died. And I don't know what to do. And I've lost my job." And just starts sobbing. And Terry is looking at all this, this young, strapping Aikido student. And just feels this wash of like, "Oh, that's real, Aikido." This man shifted, this elder shifted the situation without a blow, without a punch, and with absolute kindness. And by the time Terry got off that train, the drunk's head was in the old man's lap, and the old man was stroking his hair, and he's just sobbing. He's not a threat to anybody. So the story I'm naming, because it weaves together a couple of things here. First of all, that's masterful, right? The lack of fear is striking, the confidence, but so is the absolute peacefulness in this man. He didn't hold this guy in contempt. He wasn't angry at him. He was friendly. Engaging, and he resolved the situation without any violence at all. So, this is the interpersonal level. Someone can be supported by this inner peacefulness, non-contention, and friendliness to engage. I don't have anything that heroic to report, but I can tell you as a hospital chaplain that I often engaged with people who were very angry and meeting it with friendly interest could shift the situation. Right. Then there's the peacefulness and friendliness in the practice. So I have no idea what this little Japanese man's practice was. Maybe he was a deep meditator. Maybe he was something else. In this practice, the Buddhist practice, we can start to cultivate a similar peacefulness and friendliness within, which is the core of relating to the world out there in a peaceful, friendly way. This is from the discourses, from the connected discourses. Someone approaches the Buddha asking, "These practitioners who follow you, they live so simply, one meal a day, they don't have anything. Why are their faces so radiant and calm?" And the Buddha answers, a very famous quote, "They do not sorrow over the past, nor do they grieve, yearn for the future. They live only in the present. That is why their faces are calm and radiant. The present is sufficient for them. The present is sufficient. And this is speaking of the meditative process itself. It's not saying that we only need to live in the present ever in our lives. Our lives are more complicated than that, of course. And when we're on the cushion or in the formal practice, to let the present be sufficient, this moment be enough. And that then is really deeply supported by a sense of friendliness and peacefulness towards whatever comes up in that moment. Non-contention with what's happening. If anxiety is coming up, can I be calm about the anxiety? If grief is coming up, can I be friendly, accepting of the grief? It's always possible to take a step back and hold whatever's happening without contention. It's really powerful. It's kind of equanimity or friendliness, even towards anything that arises, allows the power of mindfulness, awareness to shift. And begin to shift and metabolize and alchemically transform the difficult into wisdom. As I mentioned last week, in this practice, the means help to bring about the ends a lot of the time. So, not hating my experience is a really good way to start not hating, not being hostile to what's coming up in my own heart and mind, my own pettiness, my own foibles, these shadows, the resistances, the blames. Holding that with openness, acceptance, love, kindness, any of those words that I read begins to shift that. Doesn't mean believe the stories, just to be with. The poem. This book of poetry is based on the awakening songs of the first Buddhist nuns, the women who were alive in the Buddhist time. And they're their awakening songs. And the poetry is a little bit of a riff on it, a more contemporary riff. It's not word for word. This is a woman named Bhadra. She writes, well, she said, and someone wrote, "You always considered yourself lucky when things seemed to work out the way you wanted. Now, luck has a different meaning. Lucky to be walking a path that finds peace in the arising and passing away of each present moment. Regardless of how things work out or don't. Be lucky to be walking a path that finds peace in each present arising moment. Regardless of how things work out or don't." It's that kind of relationship that begins to shift as the practice starts to mature, starts to deepen. Most of us can notice moments of this, little tiny glimpses, and those can be incredibly nourishing when they're noticed. So this kind of equanimity can be another expression of non-hatred and can infuse loving kindness, love. There's this ancient quote in the Dhammapada. It's in the very first chapter. And I'm going to paraphrase from memory. I've said it so many times in different English translations, but it is, hatred never ends by hatred, but by non-hate alone does it end. This is the ancient and natural law. And many of you may have heard it in its more popular form. It's actually the same Pali word, avara, for non-hate and love. Hatred never ends by hatred, but by love alone does it end. This is the ancient and natural law. So powerful is non-hatred in the early Buddhist tradition that those terms are used interchangeably. Not hating is practically considered an act of love, of loving kindness. And even though, honestly, I like the poetry of it better by using the word love, it's very powerful. There's also something really powerful about considering the power of non-hatred to end hatred. It's not quite as high of a bar as love thy enemy. It's start by not being averse to them. Start by being willing to engage, by just letting be. I've got three different stories that are contenders, maybe even four to close here. There's this, I'm going to use a light one. This is a story by the very famous metta teacher, loving kindness teacher, Sharon Salzberg. Many of you have probably heard this story. She was in India. She was a young woman, and living, I think this must have been New Delhi or something. It was this big city. And she was taking a rickshaw, hand bicycle cart type thing, to go visit Munindra, her teacher, very famous teacher. And on the way, they were accosted by someone. It is crowded as heck on Indian streets, for any of you who haven't been there. It's quite something. And someone practically jumped on the cart and tried to like tussle her purse away from her. And she and the rickshaw driver together managed to like get the guy off, rescue the purse, and keep going. And she was really shaken when she got to see her teacher. And she's shaking, she just asked Munindra, what should I have done? Here she is learning loving kindness, right? And he just looks at her and beams and says, my dear, with all the loving and kindness in your heart, you hit him over the head with your umbrella. So to say that non-hatred is not synonymous with being a doormat. She's also then saving him from the bad karma from a Buddhist perspective of stealing. So. This kind of non-hatred, whether it's expressed through love or peace, peaceability, universal friendliness, it's not unique to this wisdom tradition. It's an aspiration of all of the major spiritual paths. So it's quite beautiful to think about. And over and over in the Buddha's teachings, it's an aspiration that very serious practitioners enter into the Buddhist practice with. And there's this stock phrase, again, I'm going to paraphrase because I didn't write it down this evening. But it goes something like, setting aside weapon and rod, a practitioner enters the path, quivering for the welfare of all living beings, abandoning cruelty and hostility for all living beings, committing to non-harming. And that is the phrase that's used to describe the very motivation to enter the monastic life, the very serious practice life. So, to recap, non-hatred has a lot, a range of expressions. I mentioned a lot of them. You don't have to remember all of them or most of them. And the three main ones that are talked about the most in the Buddhist teachings are being peaceable or peaceful, a friendliness towards experience, and a commitment to expression of love and kindness. And I would add equanimity. It's another really powerful one that shows up. So, thank you for your attention. And I'm going to offer some prompts for those of you who are interested in being in discussion with each other. And I'd just like hands for those in the hall who are interested in engaging with others so I can count off groups here. Okay, everybody. So if you would please organize yourselves into two groups of four here, which is really easy to do. There's actually an empty spot in the middle of the hall. So if you just do that. And then I will set up breakout groups. I know there's at least one person who doesn't want to join, and I've got your name and I won't send you into one. If anyone else does not want to be in a breakout group, in you do not as well. Okay. Please, I'm just tracking. So a casual raise of hand of Tom and one of our Heidis. And if there's anyone else, please private chat me or just chat me. It's not particularly private since you're broadcast on a big screen and I'll leave you out. But while we're all still together, I want to give you the two prompts. You ready? Okay. The first is, what might help you notice or appreciate non-hatred in your own mind and actions and in the actions of others? So, what might help you notice it in yourself and the actions of others? And the second is, what are some obstacles to non-hatred or non-aversion? Hatred is such a strong word. So, non-aversion includes like minor hostility, aversion, garden variety, or grumpiness, even. What are some obstacles to non-hatred, non-hostility, or non-aversion in you? And how might you address them? And I'm going to ask you guys to go around in what's called a spiral style. So one person says something kind of small, the next person goes, the next person goes, the next person goes, and then you kind of build on each other. And if you're really good at talking, the invitation is to practice being concise. And if you're really quiet, the invitation is to practice speaking up. So take care of each other. Make sure each other have the amount of airtime that feels good for your group. Okay. I will put these in the chat in a minute. And Susan, did you have a question online? You're muted, Susan. Oops, you're okay. There you are.
Got it. I want to bow out, please.
Okay.
Okay.
I will try to remember all three. Why don't the three of you who want to bow out online just turn off your camera for now? That'll make it easier for me.
Thank you.
And then you can just meditate quietly. Okay. And if other people turned off their camera but don't want to bow out, please let me know. Okay. So please, people in the room, go ahead and I will ring a bell in about 15 minutes or so. And friends on Zoom, I'm going to mute so that you don't hear chaos in here.
That's okay.
Yeah, sorry folks for bringing you back a little earlier than expected. Normally the breakout rooms allow me to extend, and they didn't this time. I'm not sure what happened. So welcome back. I hope it was interesting. And please take a moment to greet each other over chat or in the room to just thank your partners now that we're all back. And I would love to hear any insights that you heard, or let me know how that was for you, or that you heard come out of your own mouth. About, let's start with the first one. What might help you notice, appreciate, cultivate non-hatred in yourself? Or notice it in others. Maybe start with the Zoom room first if anyone wants to offer anything. Or from either of the prompts.
In our group, rather, we all kind of related about the tendency to like for the kind of concurrence of like judgment and aversion, and also like storytelling, like narrativizing things, right? They're kind of the same-ish, where it's like you have these judgments and then you kind of create the story to like justify them or whatever, and how much work that actually is.
Yeah, that's great, Jared. Thank you. Yes, judgments and justification stories. Yes. Anybody else online want to share? I'm pretty sure you talked most of the time.
Well, we talked about the how helpful it is to have some interest, curiosity, and openness to others instead of closing.
Yeah, that's great. So, interest and curiosity. That reminds me of something, Heidi. I'm not going to get the quote exactly perfect, but that the opposite of hate is not love, but it is lack of interest. And so, by some convoluted English, you could say that interest I may have gotten that wrong. The opposite of hatred. The opposite of love is not interest, and the opposite of hatred is interest.
I
Thank you.
think it's indifference is the way it's usually said. The opposite of love is indifference.
Yes. Like I said, paraphrasing.
Yeah.
Anybody in the physical room want to share how that group was for you? And please, if you do, ask that you use the microphone so that our Zoom friends can hear. And please give your name since you guys don't have those handy name tags.
My name's Kim, and one thing that we talked about was how trying to practice non-hatred can be difficult when we can't do it to ourselves.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Why don't you hold on to it and see if anyone else wants? What's your name?
My name is Jesse.
Hi, Jesse.
Yeah, there was we discussed a lot, so it's kind of difficult to summarize. But I guess a lot of us echoed that it's easier to feel hatred or non-hatred in our bodies before we notice it up here. And noticing how, I mean, it was like harder to describe how non-hatred felt. And I suppose that kind of is related to maybe how sort of open-ended that side of your day is. But also just since it's sort of there's a lot of ease associated with this, I think that makes it almost harder to notice in general. And one thing that came up for me that maybe you can speak to that I'm kind of not sure about is the last part of the first prompt was how we notice it in others. And I just wasn't really sure how to do that, or how can we ever really know what is going on for others?
That's fine. And I apologize for giving you a long prompt, but the second part of it was how do you notice it in the actions of others?
I mean, I guess to me it still seems like it's there's a certain amount of interpretation, or and I worry that there's a risk of projection. You know, what's going on for us, kind of filtering what we see in our stuff.
There could be, and I would push back just a little and say that I think there are moments it's really obvious. Right? So you don't have to look for the subtle stuff, the projections. Look for the moments where the person who jumped on the train tracks to save another person's life, that was not motivated by hatred. You know, that kind of stuff, right? You can, there's queer moments of altruism, non-hatred in the more dramatic forms even.
And then I guess with that, I can really see how useful it is to say non-hatred instead of what it is. Like, I don't really know what the motivation is, but there's
Right.
certain ways
But it
to
wasn't
say
hate,
that.
right? So, I'll, so to, and that's part of the richness of exploring this field of the many varieties of what non-hatred can look like is we don't know exactly what motivated that person. They might not know exactly what motivated them. But we could say with a fair amount of confidence it wasn't loathing. You're welcome. And to speak also something else that you said, Jesse, I really appreciated your share. That noticing the feeling, the pre-verbal, even pre-thought feeling of, for example, hostility, and how clear that can be in the body. And the Buddha, I didn't use this discourse quote tonight, but he actually talks about that as that moment being like noticing the moment a grass fire starts. And that if you stomp it out, in that moment, it doesn't spread. But if you let it go or you don't notice it, next thing you know, you have a conflagration. So part of the art of noticing non-hate is also noticing when all the little varieties of hatred, hostility, irritation, resentment, whatever. Those arise once we have a reference point of non-hatred, they become more obvious. And hopefully, it's possible to meet that natural human arising. If the Buddha was talking about it 2600 years ago, I'm pretty sure hatred came installed in most human operating systems from way, way back, right? So there doesn't need to be shame about it. And can there be love for the whole being that we are, despite the foibles, despite the imperfections. That can help soften it. So again, dear friends, we are at time. Thank you very much, each of you, for the wisdom you brought into your groups, into the room, for your presence, your voices, your silence, your practice. And Heidi, for correcting my quote, which I just in my COVID brain fog could not get out of my mouth. May all beings everywhere benefit from our practice together. And may the benefits of this practice ripple through our hearts and lives and the hearts and lives of all of us, all we touch. May all beings be free. Thank you all very much for your practice. Hope to see some of you next week.